The Soot phenomenon is a slow onset disaster, which is unique to Mongolia. In fact, Soot means disaster in Mongolian, and it results from a combination of summer drought followed by heavy snowfalls and extreme cold. And this leads to insufficient grazing pastures, both in summer and winter, which results in underfed animals that are unable to build up fat reserves needed for winter survival. Livestock mortality increases significantly during Soots. And for a culture where livestock is integral, in particular for the nomadic style of life, the impacts of Soot can be really devastating.
So given that Mongolia faces Soot almost every year, why is it so extreme this time?
It's extreme this time because it combines two phenomena. The one is what we call the white Soot, and this is deep snow cover along the plains, which prevent animals from accessing grass. And we need to remember that these are animals that are already underfed and lacking in the fat reserves because of the summer drought. So the white Soot prevents them from accessing the pastures. And then there is often a short thaw, so a slight increase in temperature, a melting of the snow, but it's quickly followed by a hard freeze. And this hard freeze sees this melting snow turn very quickly into ice. And so it locks up the pastures in ice. And this is what is known as the iron Soot. So it's a combination of both the snow cover, the pastures locked up in ice, and the combination of these two phenomena this year have made the Soot particularly strong and extreme.
In one of your recent reports, in one of ESCAP's recent reports, it was noted that climate change also plays an impact in this. Can you explain how?
So in our latest Asia-Pacific disaster report, which comes out every 2 years, we have highlighted the emerging scenarios for a world that is hurtling to the 1.5 to 2 degrees centigrade warming. And for Mongolia, not surprisingly, we find that the frequency and the intensity of Soots is going to increase. And unfortunately, you know, the stresses that increased intensity and frequency of Soots brings, it triggers a vicious circle. It triggers deforestation, it triggers overgrazing, and it triggers land degradation. And all of these really amplify the impacts of Soot and lead to long-term irreversible consequences.
So ESCAP has it's one of the few UN agencies to have a specific space program for sustainable development. How is the organization using this technology and other new technologies to mitigate the risk?
Right. So this is, you know, one of the things that hold out hope for everyone. You know, things look bad, but technology innovation, space application innovation is really opening up a huge array of tools that help us deepen our understanding of these phenomena, and they help us predict with far greater accuracy what is going to happen. And so we have a regional space applications program, which was started in 1994. So it is really a program that had, I think, a lot of foresight, because, you know, who would have known in 1994 that a program like this would become so useful? So the program taps into the expertise of the space-faring countries, and not only the expertise, but also all the satellite images that they generate. And it combines this information, satellite-derived information and expertise, with the needs of countries that are not space-faring. And ESCAP facilitates this exchange of experiences.
So you just shared with us a very interesting example of how space-faring countries are collaborating with countries that are not able to use space applications yet. Given the unique role of ESCAP, can you give us some more examples on how you are bringing countries together to address other similar disasters and crises that span international borders?
We are working on a virtual constellation of satellites that will provide very high resolution satellite imagery to countries that are high disaster risk and have relatively low disaster analytical capacities. Now, as we know, there is the charter of the UN, UN charter is called, which is triggered when a disaster hits, and then the countries that have satellites over the particular disaster area provide the satellite imagery for free. Now, this happens post-disaster, when the damage, the destruction, you know, everything has happened. And it plays a key role in the disaster response. Now, what ESCAP is working on is a system very similar to the one that exists post-disaster, but a system that will exist pre-disaster and will provide such images to the countries requesting such images for particular disaster risk hotspots. And having this information and being able to analyze how the risk hotspots are evolving and what the likely people and environmental impacts of a disaster will be enables governments to prepare in advance and to put in place policies pre-disaster that can be triggered very quickly if and when a disaster hits. And, you know, being prepared pre-disaster ensures that a disaster is managed more effectively through its entire cycle.
That was a very nice way to round up on how you are also addressing the vulnerabilities before the disasters. But before we conclude, would you like to add anything from your end?
Only just to re-emphasize the point that early warning is key. There is a global executive action plan on early warning for all that was launched at COP27. And ESCAP has been given a mandate to implement a regional strategy on early warning. As more and more disasters are climate related, they are also transboundary. And so that regional collaboration among countries becomes even more important. And ESCAP has been asked to implement such a regional strategy. So it's a key priority for us. We're working in close collaboration with our member states. And we're also working very closely with our partners to ensure that we leverage on the increasing opportunities that digital technology and space application innovations are bringing. Every day we are reading about new things that are emerging. The picture is a little dismal at the moment, but there is hope for a more resilient future.